Hello, welcome to the Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the next hour. We invite you to tune in every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for this show. My co-host, Kevin Pissarro, and I will be alternating shows dedicated to your health, your diet, nutrition, lifestyle, and exercise. So please join us every Saturday morning. Now, today's topics will be varied. I always cover news you can use, and we'll be talking about such issues as muscles and preserving and improving muscle function. We'll talk about the statins, they're in the news again, and about asthma and prostate cancer health and prostate cancer survival. Now, we will have a guest, and it's Dr. Kim, and she's a board-certified family practice physician who practices integrative and holistic medicine in Virginia. We will be talking about secondary causes of osteoporosis and some brand new news about nutrients and osteoporosis bone health, and it will surprise you. This is truly new. Want to remind you that there's a wonderful sale at Village Green, 30% off on Pathways products. Now, this is going on right now through July 15th. So make sure that you get over to the Village Green Apothecary. 30% off on Pathways products, 25% off on all others, and 20% off beauty care products. Again, that's Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Well, let's check the news you can use. And what about these muscles? Most people are not aware that as we age, we actually lose muscle mass. It is harder to maintain lean muscle versus body fat. And this is called sarcopenia when we get this loss of muscle mass. Now, diet and exercise are very important, and the protein intake is important. Now, protein comes from that Greek word proteos, which actually means essentially first and foremost. So that's what protein is, first and foremost. And those of you who have been patients of mine know that I talk a great deal about the importance of protein. Now, getting protein in is the issue. If you're not eating it, you certainly can't build healthy muscle if you're not eating good protein. But even if you consume a good amount of protein, you may not be digesting it well. To amino acids, you may not be absorbing those amino acids, and you may not be transporting them well to the tissues. And if you have a zinc deficiency, you don't utilize the amino acids well. So even with good protein intake, we can end up looking like we don't take much protein in. And this is particularly true of individuals who are on long-term antacid therapy, meaning more than a few months. So what happens to people when they're aging and their protein intake is not as good or the amino acids don't get to the tissues? They get weak muscles and they're unable to exercise well. They may injure themselves easily. And although we stress that bones will break or weak bones will cause a fall, we don't stress the importance of muscle structure and muscle function in falls. With weak muscles, older people cannot catch themselves as easily, and they are more likely to have a fall. And I'm sure you've noticed this among older people and family members. Now, let's talk a little bit about the quality of protein and how much. We've talked about this before. Each person's serving of animal protein is equal to the size of their palm, and it's about 3 ounces in a female, 4 or 5 ounces in a male, and that's 3 times a day. And that palm of 3 ounces of chicken or fish or meat or poultry or 3 ounces of cheese will give us about 24 grams of protein. So we're trying to aim for approximately 75 grams a day, but needs become higher if you are an exerciser, if you're very active, if you're pregnant. So as we're growing and when we're pregnant and when we're exercising, our needs for protein increase. Now, how can you visualize how much protein in beans? If you cup 2 palms, that would be how many beans you would want to eat. It's a lot of beans. It's not just a few. And you can mix it up. You can have a salad that has some nuts and seeds, which is protein. You can have a little bit of cheese, which is protein, some fish or poultry. You may have some beans in that salad. So it's good to mix it up to get the protein. And the highest quality protein is the egg. The egg is a wonderful addition. It does not cause heart disease. It's actually cardioprotective. It's considered at this point a functional food. And the egg white is the perfect protein against which all other proteins are measured. Now, a little bit in the news about statins again, and we talk about this quite a bit. There was an interesting study on Crestar, and what was found is that, and I want you to really listen to this, Crestar did reduce the risk for heart attack or stroke by half. But in terms of real-world risk, only one person out of 120 people actually taking Crestar would benefit from the drug, as the trials that have been done have indicated. Now, Crestar is a statin, and they turn down the production of cholesterol, but they also antagonize or reduce coenzyme Q10, which is your energy-producing enzyme. This is why they can cause neurological and muscle damage. So what happened in this is that, yes, the Crestar, it is anti-inflammatory. It does reduce heart attacks or strokes, and those are ischemic strokes. But 25% more patients taking Crestar developed type 2 diabetes compared with the placebo. There's also an increased risk for stroke by bleeding. Why does that happen? Because cholesterol is part of your cell membranes. It's the bricks in your cell membranes. And when it is driven too low, you are subject to weak cell membranes. You can get a retinal bleed. You can get a bleed in the brain, which is called a stroke. Also, there's an increased risk for suicide and accidents. Now, why does that happen? Because cholesterol is essential for serotonin metabolism. This is believed to be the reason behind the suicides, and the accidents are considered to be hidden suicides. So it's not always a benefit, and what you have to weigh is the risk versus benefit and make sure that you've done the first thing first. Look at your diet, get good protein, good fiber, reduce all those processed carbohydrates, breads, pasta, crackers, pretzels, bagels, etc. Getting real foods, lots of bright colors and deep colors because they have a lot of antioxidants. Exercise, absolutely exercise. Don't overeat. And supplement wisely with vitamins, minerals, and omega-3 fatty acids. Okay, a little bit about asthmatics. And this is something new. A little piece of research found a link between vitamin D insufficiency and asthma severity. And we've talked a lot about the epidemic of vitamin D deficiency that we have in this country, and it's an epidemic throughout the world. So serum vitamin D levels in more than 600 children were inversely linked to several indicators of allergy and asthma severity. So inverse relationships mean as vitamin D levels went down, allergy and asthma increased. And this certainly may be part of the reason, not the entire reason, that we're seeing increases in allergy and asthma. So children with lower vitamin D levels were more likely to have been hospitalized for asthma in the previous year, and they tended to have airways with increased hyperreactivity. They call it reactive airways disease, and were likely to have used more inhaled corticosteroids. Those are the inhalers. This signified higher asthma severity, and these children were also significantly more likely to have several markers of allergy, including dust mite sensitivity. Now, what is asthma? It's an inflammatory condition, and it's typically of the upper and lower airways. It's common. Symptoms include chest tightness, shortness of breath, wheezing, and coughing. And vitamin D is actually an anti-inflammatory, so it makes sense that vitamin D can help. Get a test done. don't rely even on the new increased recommendations, which have gone from 400 international units a day for children to 800 or 1,000. But some children need a lot more. And the test you need is the 25-hydroxy vitamin D3. That's 25-hydroxy vitamin D3. Now on to prostate cancer survival. And this was a 22-year Harvard School of Public Health study of over 20,000 men. And what they found is that fish intake did improve survival rates among men who had prostate cancer. So men who had prostate cancer who ate fish five or more times weekly had a 48% lower risk of dying from the disease than those who ate fish less than once a week. So that's an important piece of news. I always remind people that omega-3 fatty acids, which we get in fish, are very healthy for the prostate. CoQ10 is. Quercetin, which is an anti-inflammatory bioflavonoid. Zinc, selenium, and saw palmetto is also very healthy. So just remember, men, you can eat a healthier diet, get more antioxidants, include healthy fish, and take your supplements. So those are our reminders, news you can use. And I just want to remind you about the sale at Pathways. And that's Pathways of Village Green, 30% off on Pathways products, 25% off on all others, and 20% off beauty care products. This is Dana Lake, and we're going to take a brief break. Please stay with us. We are going to have some interesting news about osteoporosis. Hello, welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the hour, and we have a very exciting guest with whom we're going to speak tonight, today, Dr. Kim. She's an MD, and she is certified in family practice, and she practices integrative and holistic medicine in Virginia. Welcome to the show, Dr. Kim.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It's good to have you on the show, and I mentioned that we're going to be talking about osteoporosis, but I'd like you to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your practice and your background.
Okay, wonderful. Well, I, as you mentioned, I'm a board-certified family practitioner, and I've been in practice for about 11 years now and went through the traditional allopathic training and realized about halfway into my career that there had to be more to medicine than prescribing pharmaceuticals to treat symptoms. And so that took me on a journey really towards nutrition and functional medicine and really starting to integrate how important lifestyle factors were in management of chronic disease. And so that's I am currently in Annandale in a practice with a chiropractor, Dr. Fuller, and Dr. Petrie, who's also a functional chiropractor who does functional medicine and endocrinology, and a massage therapist. And it's been a wonderful experience, really, to be in that kind of environment.
Well, that's a good combination. You're practicing integrative medicine.
Right. And it's really, to practice holistically really is the best way to go.
Well, it's rewarding. I always tell people I was a partner in several alternative medicine practices for a long time, and I always would say to a new nurse or health practitioner, once you walk in these doors and learn this, you can never see medicine the same way again.
It truly is life-changing.
It is, and it's so rewarding in what you can do for patients. And what I remind people is that you didn't throw out the knowledge you had. You have the same knowledge everybody else has that comes out of medical training. You have additional knowledge. You speak several languages in health.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's interesting how many people think people jump ship. So they unlearn what they learned.
Exactly.
And they learn something new. No, it's additional.
Yeah, I feel like you get the best of both worlds, really.
Oh, yeah. And let's go on to the subject of osteoporosis and some background on it. I think it's always good to fill patients in on what osteoporosis is. And then let's get into some of the interesting new findings.
That would be wonderful.
So what is your definition of osteoporosis for patients to understand it?
Well, I think, you know, to put it really simply, I mean, I just tell folks that osteoporosis is when your bone breakdown exceeds formation, really. And while this is a typical occurrence once you reach a certain age, and the common thought is about 30 is when you reach your peak bone mass, I think when it is accelerated and it's more than what we would typically think for someone your age, then you really think that osteoporosis is the diagnosis that you need to be concerned about.
Yes, with age, the risk is higher, there's no doubt.
Sure.
And sure. It seems to me we're seeing increases in it, and I know that we're diagnosing it more quickly than in the past and recognizing it, but in the U.S., we have pretty high rates.
Yes, we do. And I think that the reason why I was very interested in what we would call secondary osteoporosis is because there is a lot of premature diagnoses of osteoporosis occurring in men and with premenopausal women in these age categories that you typically would not see osteoporosis.
And what are those secondary causes?
Well, they're myriad. And I have to say that I think that the more you really delve into osteoporosis, you realize that it's truly not just a calcium deficiency issue. I think the newer thinking really is that the immune system is tied very much into how fast you lose bone. And inflammation in particular is probably the primary regulator of bone formation and bone loss. So when you look at it from that perspective, it's quite different than the conventional thinking.
It certainly is, and I'm so glad you've brought this up. Let's go a little further into how inflammation contributes to the secondary bone loss osteoporosis.
Yes, I think that in the last year or two, the newer research actually is producing a new paradigm, and that while hormones are still an important factor with bone remodeling, I think that they're now recognizing that osteoblasts, which are the bone-forming cells, actually express a specific protein that can dock onto receptors of the bone resorbing cells, like osteoclasts. And so there's actual expression of production of more of these bone resorbing cells. And it's impacted very much by what we call inflammatory cytokines. These are proteins that your immune system actually produce as signals. And there is a decoy receptor that can block how this interaction can occur, thereby controlling whether bone remodeling occurs at a rapid rate or whether it occurs in a very stable rate.
And what is that decoy, that blocker?
Oh, it's called OPG. So they call this whole system RANK, R-A-N-K, RANKL and OPG, but these proteins actually will regulate this whole bone remodeling process. And there are many things that influence this. You know, hormones are one of those factors. But like I mentioned, inflammation in general can be cytokines, like some of those interleukins you might have heard of, interleukin 1, interleukin 6, the tumor necrosis factors. Some of these things can actually modify that response, whether it be more rapid bone loss or more of a stable bone maintenance. So you mentioned, for example, secondary causes, and I think that one of the things that we see commonly is, of course, from a lifestyle standpoint, things like high-protein diets because of the fact of the way you could produce metabolic acidosis or a more acid state in your system, and thereby breaking down calcium in terms of how the kidneys will excrete it. And so you actually mobilize more calcium from the bone to buffer that kind of acidity. Things like smoking, and of course you've heard of phosphorus in sodas, alcohol, antacids, which it seems as if there's a epidemic of folks on antacids.
That's the truth.
Excessive caffeine, probably from the acidity. And one of the things that I have encountered frequently that is not necessarily something that is touted as a contributing cause of osteoporosis, but is definitely in the environmental world and the occupational medicine world, especially is heavy metals. And I do believe that heavy metals plays a huge impact on a secondary cause of osteoporosis.
So oh,
things
yes.
like lead, cadmium, which you're going to find in like in smoke, tin, you know, very common in our amalgams and fungicides and insecticides, and aluminum. So a lot of these metals have been implicated, especially in the environmental or occupational medicine literature, as contributors to osteoporosis.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it really is. So aside from, of course, particular nutrient deficiencies, whether, you know, it be your trace minerals and your magnesium and your folic acid and B vitamins, et cetera, there's definitely issues with these environmental impact that we don't quite think about.
And they may override the ability to get enough nutrients in. That's for certain.
Absolutely.
Exercise. Give us a little hint about why exercise is so helpful to bone.
Well, you know, I think most folks understand, at least it's common knowledge, that, you know, you really do want to have weight-bearing type of exercise. There's microtrauma that occurs on the bones that actually help with healing of the bone and actually creating a more dense bone. So, you know, things like walking, of course, running, other weight-bearing exercises can be very helpful. I find that actually what seems to be helpful in my population is mini trampoline. So resistance exercises also are very important, and that seems to be commonplace, strength training, et cetera. But the mini trampoline offers some of that microtrauma because you are weight-bearing, and yet it's pretty easy on the knees and joints.
And it can be fun, especially if you turn the music on.
Yeah.
Well, what we'll do is we'll take a little break now, and we'll come right back. Listeners, please stay with us. We're having an interesting discussion with Dr. Kim about osteoporosis, and we have a lot of good information ahead. This is Dana Lake and Village Green Apothecary. Please stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. Hello, welcome back, listeners, to the Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the hour, and we're speaking with Dr. Kim. She's an MD, and she is certified in family practice, and her practice is in Virginia in integrative and holistic medicine. We're talking about osteoporosis, and we covered some of the basics and the background and the causes. Just as a reminder, lack of exercise, getting sodas in the diet is negative. Alcohol, caffeine, heavy metals, you've heard this before, but I cannot emphasize enough that we have to get all sodas, diet and regular, out of the human diet. They are detrimental for many, many reasons. Today we're talking about osteoporosis. So let's discuss a little bit more about this as far as tests that people can have done to establish bone health or bone status. And then we'll go on and talk about some of the supplements and the diet changes that are helpful.
Okay, that sounds wonderful. Well, the traditional testing that is used is what we call a DEXA scan, which is a dual absorption scan. And essentially, you'd get a prescription from your doctor, and they would do a special type of X-ray that would actually look for bone density. Unfortunately, it's really not a great measure, however, of how your bones are mineralized and really whether you've had any acute bone loss. So it gives you a snapshot picture of what that density looks like. And while, you know, we use that marker as kind of our diagnostic stratification for folks, like, well, should we treat very aggressively with some of the pharmaceuticals that we have, or should we just kind of wait and see? It's probably only accounts for like half of the fractures. So a low bone density or shown on a DEXA scan may not be very predictive of whether you will have a fracture, unfortunately.
And people aren't aware of that.
No, they're not aware of that. I think that folks do have some measure of comfort when they have a normal bone density and don't really look at, well, is there something I can do to optimize my bone health, because they're relying solely on that marker. When you look at 50%, though, that can't be accounted for. Even with a normal bone density scan, it's kind of tough to really use that alone. And so I've encouraged folks to actually look at markers of bone formation and breakdown. And some of those are urine collagen studies. I don't know if you're familiar with those.
Use those regularly.
Yeah, the osteocalcin, the NTX profile, we call it, that are helpful for measuring breakdown. And then the other things you can check for is what they call the N-terminal polypeptide.
Yes.
Type 1 procollagen, IGF-2, insulin growth factor 2. So some of these can be useful to look for bone formation. I've also encouraged folks to think about, if they're looking for risk, Genova Diagnostics offers a genomics profile that actually looks at specific, what we call single nucleotide polymorphisms. So little genetic defects that actually may impact how your collagen is formed, your vitamin D receptors, your calcitonin receptors, various things like that that can actually influence whether you may be predisposed to osteoporosis.
That's important because people think of bone as being all mineral, when the matrix, the collagen matrix, there's more matrix than there is mineral.
Exactly.
Minerals deposited, and that's why it's so important to support healthy collagen. Go back a minute on the peptide test. I love this peptide test. It's as a measure of markers that increase when bone is breaking down. So if the markers are too high, if you're spilling too many byproducts from bone loss, then you really can't build that bone up as readily. And it tells people what's happening actively.
Exactly. So while a DEXA scan will give you kind of a static density, you know, if you are having rapid bone loss on a, you know, short-term or day-to-day basis, you really aren't getting the full picture of what's actually happening, because the bone is a dynamic process. I mean, it is not a static tissue. So it does give you a much better idea for folks who've been on steroids, who are on multiple other meds that actually contribute to osteoporosis, and I didn't really touch on that as a important cause, but it's a very important reason why folks do get secondary osteoporosis. Unfortunately, we see a lot of pharmaceuticals, and that's a big, big cause. So when we're looking at things like calcium channel blockers and proton pump inhibitors, we're talking like Acefex and
yes.
Prevacid and Prilosec, and that has come to the surface actually more recently about its impact on bone. Even SSRIs, things like Prozac and Zoloft, that's listed on their PI sheet, that yes, osteoporosis can be a byproduct, unfortunately, of use. Anticonvulsants, very common. We see a lot of anticonvulsants now being used for things other than epilepsy, things like neuropathies and depression and many other reasons. So that's becoming wider in use. Diuretics, which is very, very common for hypertension. Heparin and methotrexate, and those are probably the most common ones. But steroids by far, you know, whether it be oral steroids for asthma or, you know, even inhaled and steroids for, you know, allergies and asthma control, that impact over a long period of time can definitely make some impact on bone loss.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned the steroids. So many of my patients are told that the inhaled steroids don't have an effect. I said, well, then they're not useful if they don't have an effect. And if the comment is that they will help you, it means they get into those tissues and they're absorbed across mucosal tissues, whether it's in the lungs, whether it's in the nasal cavities. And it gets, I know there are certain tests that we can't do when someone's on inhaled steroids. We have to wait almost a month for them to clear.
Absolutely. So when you're testing for adrenal function, for example, inhaled steroids, topical steroids, all of those things are going to impact that. So, yeah, I completely agree. I think that some of the studies, you know, don't look at the long-term effects of these quote-unquote microscopic levels, and that's really what we're looking at is the cumulative, you know, burden.
Well, when you add it up, if somebody's also on an acids, which is a high risk, and an SSRI, and this is not unusual, and osteoporosis tends to be in people that are adults, especially older adults, and they are those that are usually also taking more meds.
Absolutely.
Well, let's mention a little bit about the osteocalcin indicator.
That's actually a serum test. And so that's a blood test, and essentially the osteocalcin is a function of the matrix upon which the bones mineral, or which calcium mineralizes. So it is a very good marker for formation. And vitamin K is very much tied into this.
Yes.
So if you have a vitamin K deficiency, for example, you know, you don't get a lot of good processing of fats. Of course, they're in dark green leafy vegetables, so if you're not eating those, or you have an abnormal gut flora, because your gut flora is actually going to produce some vitamin K for you, those things are going to predispose you to deficiencies.
So there are some other ways to assess bone status, and these are not commonly understood, and it can give you an elegant level of where you are and how you need to change. And, of course, the vitamin D we always mention, we talked about earlier, a very easy test to get now, the vitamin D3 test.
Oh, absolutely, and that's become commonplace now to do vitamin D testing. It's reached more national awareness. I think vitamin K is going to be next up on the line, but absolutely, vitamin D is crucial for important calcium mineralization and absorption.
Well, good. We're going to take another brief break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about treatment as far as diet, medications, and nutrients. I do want to remind our listeners that Village Green has that sale going on right now through July 15th, 30% off for Pathways products, 25% off on all others, and 20% off beauty care products. So drop by Village Green Apothecary, West Cedar Lane in Bethesda. This is Dana Lake with the Essentials of Healthy Living. Please stay with us, listeners. We will be right back. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to the final segment of today's show, The Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dana Lake, your host for this hour, and I want to remind you to tune in every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. And the next shows will be hosted by Kevin Passaro, and Dr. Passaro has many exciting topics to cover. We've been talking with Dr. Kim about osteoporosis. We're going to continue that discussion and go on to talk about treatments, both medicinal, dietary, and supplements. Can you give us a real quick rundown on the medicinal treatments, and then let's go on to the supplements and the diet changes?
Sure. Well, as far as treatments go, there's several, and I think the most common are the bisphosphonates, we call them. In other words, Fosamax, Actonel, Boniva, to name a couple. And what these do is they bind to the hydroxyapatite crystals in bone and inhibit the bone resorption cells, the breakdown cells, from acting. It actually prolongs the death of these osteoclasts. So, it does stabilize bone loss. It does not recover any bone loss, but it can stabilize it. And no one really knows how long these effects last in the body. The unfortunate side effects, though, with bisphosphonates that I commonly encounter is that folks have a lot of gastric irritation. And so it's sometimes tough to really tolerate. There's also more recent literature regarding IV bisphosphonates, but this also relates to oral bisphosphonate intake with osteonecrosis of the jaw or the glass jaw.
Yes.
And so that's a really important thing to mention to your dentist. If you are actually taking these medications, that you need to notify your dentist and let him or her be aware of that.
What about the use of miacalcin? I know it's not that popular.
Yeah, miacalcin, calcitonin, is actually an inhibitor of these breakdown osteoclasts. And so it's actually a fairly innocuous way of getting something that has fairly good effect. I think that the local irritation in the nose seems to be the most common complaint. But a lot of folks actually do okay with that, and I can tell you that, especially my elderly patients, they actually do fairly well with the miacalcin.
Well, my understanding is, too, that it actually can increase bone. It drives calcium into the bone.
Yeah, I mean, calcitonin may have that activity, though I have to say that probably the Forteo, the injectable PTH, is probably the only one that has been shown consistently to really increase bone density. The remainder of the pharmaceutical treatments are really more just to retard loss.
And what are the side effects of the Forteo, the PTH?
Well, the one that folks are really concerned about, but it's very rare, is osteosarcoma, which is a specific type of tumor. But it's not very common to have. And I think for folks who are who have had significant fractures already, vertebral fractures or hip fractures, and have extremely low bone density, these are the folks who usually end up on Forteo.
Okay. Well, that's a good rundown. I appreciate that, Dr. Kim. Let's go into the supplements. We've talked a lot about some of these nutrients, that calcium's important, but it is not the whole ball game. We've talked about controlling inflammation, using magnesium, vitamin K, vitamin D3, and we know that zinc and selenium and boron also play an important role. I always use collagen support and the B vitamins. Most people are not going to run out and buy all these individuals, so I tend to go with combination products.
Sure, sure, and I understand that Pathways actually has several products that are actually designed for osteoporosis prevention. So they've got vitamin K2 and, of course, D3 and several other products that have multiple supplements, including zinc and your B vitamins and K2, what are some of the other common ones? Magnesium, of course, boron,
silica,
manganese.
Yeah, and silica's in there as well. They're Bone Guardian. They have a vegetarian formula and one that is organic, includes organic hydroxyapatite bones. So Bone Guardian, vegetarian, and the regular Bone Guardian have these combinations. I also like their CalMag Plus, which is basically calcium, magnesium, different forms of it, and then all what I call cofactors. So it does make it easy for a patient to get the combination.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think I wanted to make a quick comment about calcium as well, because so many folks think that this is really a calcium deficiency issue when it really isn't. But folks have gotten into, well, calcium is good for me, and they end up picking up the calcium carbonate off the shelf, and it just isn't... it's just not the best calcium that's bioavailable and not very well absorbed, for that matter. And so there is some thought that really too much calcium in the system can actually prematurely age bone.
That's interesting.
Yes. So there is that theory out there that there is only so a finite regenerative capacity for bone. And every time you actually form bone, you have to break down bone in the process. And there's only, like I said, a finite regenerative capacity. So if you rapidly turn bone over, you will actually prematurely age bone. So I think that while there are recommendations of how much calcium would be good to take, and of course this is all stratified by age, sometimes that's really too much for some individuals. And so I think that it's a very individual thing, but as a general recommendation, as a range, folks say, well, 600 to 1,200 milligrams a day. So I think that's something that each physician really needs to individualize depending on other factors.
Oh, absolutely. And I also wanted to mention the excellent Zymogen product, Osipan MD, which is, again, a hydroxyapatite. Product, calcium, magnesium, and vitamin D. It's a more simple one, but I like it. It doesn't have as many capsules or tablets. And then I'm very interested in this new product Metagenics has, the Ostera. And all of these products are available at Village Green or myvillagegreen.com for our listeners. And the Ostera really addresses more of these other areas, taking into account the inflammation. Is that not true?
That is true. I mean, and Metagenics have, conducted their own trials, but essentially it contains vitamin D, K, berberine, which is an alkaloid from a plant that's actually got a lot of antifungal bacterial activity. And what they call a kinase modulator that addresses the whole inflammatory component. So it's kind of a novel product, and I think, again, it ties back into the whole inflammatory effect and the immune system connection with bone. So I think that's a product that we have just started using and have gotten some good results with.
Excellent. Well, I'm sorry we're at the end of the show. It would be nice if we could go longer. And Dr. Kim, I appreciate you being on the show. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate being on the show and being asked. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. And listeners, I hope that was helpful to you. You can go on myvillagegreen.com and download the shows. It's a good way to catch up. And there are lots of different topics that you can listen to as well. Remember that Village Green is having a huge sale now through July 15th, and I also want to remind you that they deliver and they use a smart car, and it's just as cute as it can be, because Village Green is encouraging you to go green. And if you go on myvillagegreen.com, just go on the Go Green area. Remember to take care of yourself and at least one other person and go green. This is Dana Lake and Village Green wishing each and every one of you good health, and a great day.